Welcome to another episode of The Gateway. My name is Russ, and as always, I am joined by my co-hosts Amin and Biagio. And for this episode, The Gateway is excited to welcome Dennis Citalio, a principal technical program manager with the GE Healthcare IT Business Development Team. Dennis has been with the company for 15 years, starting as an intern in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Along his journey, he held multiple positions ranging from completion of information technology leadership programs to running IT infrastructure integrations for GE Healthcare, GE Digital, and GE Corporate. In his various roles, he has made significant contributions to integrating 30-plus M&A deals, enhancing GE's digital footprint, and streamlining numerous processes. His expertise spans from understanding wide-ranging technology stacks, assessing W2W business processes, enterprise applications, change management, user enablement, and PMO program management. Dennis holds a bachelor's degree from Loyola University Chicago in communications, network, and security. Dennis lives in Naperville, Illinois with his wife and two daughters. Outside of work, he enjoys camping, gardening, cryptocurrency, and supporting Ukraine in their fight against Russian aggression. Dennis, welcome to The Gateway. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be on.
Awesome. Awesome. We are really excited. I was reading through everything and kind of getting ready for this conversation. And I kept getting more and more excited because I think you have such a wide and impressive background. And I think it's going to be perfect for where we're at. But as always with these conversations, I want to start at the beginning. So how did you get to where you are?
Sure. So, how did I get to where I am here? It's through Biagio, right?
Yeah, you got to know the right guy, and then you're a guest on the podcast. Yeah,
but I'm guessing that's not your question. I'm guessing your question is how did I get to my current job and my current role and everything, right? So, I work for GE Healthcare, and I do my role is I'm a principal technical program manager, and specifically I work within the IT business development team. So basically, what does that mean? We do mergers and acquisitions on our team. So plain man speak, that means basically we go and buy companies and we sell companies and we, you know. So basically acquisitions, divestitures, sometimes you have joint ventures, these types of things. How did I get here? So, the funny thing is like I've been doing this since I started. So I didn't really bounce around a whole lot, as a lot of people do with their careers. For me, it actually started with an internship opportunity. So back when I was in the summer following my sophomore year, I landed an internship with General Electric back at the time, so GE, which now I work for GE Healthcare, but back then it was part of this larger conglomerate, which was General Electric. And back then, you know, GE was a massive company. It was probably one of the, I think at one point in time, it was the biggest company by market cap. Large conglomerate, they did, basically like oil and gas, aviation and healthcare and G Capital, which was the finance arm, transportation, which like makes like locomotives and stuff, you know, even like you fly on the aircraft, like the engines are like G aviation engines a lot of time. So it's like, you know, it's everywhere, right? And back then I was like, oh, this is so cool. You know, I'm going to work for this like giant company. I took that opportunity, and it was great. Like I did one internship that year, and then I did another internship after my junior year. And then I actually rolled off after I graduated. So I kind of got a foot in the door. And then I joined this leadership program. So they have a, it's called an Information Technology Leadership Program. So I was very lucky to get into that. Like, it's something you apply for and then you get into right out of college. And what they do, and I think they still have this today under GE Healthcare, like within each of these separate GE business units, they give you rotations. So it's like 6 month rotations. And there's four of them. So it's a 2 year program, 4 6-month rotations. And then within IT, there's different areas within IT. So like I rolled off into the IT organization and I did this information technology leadership program, which is, you know, IT an IT leadership program, which aligned to my major, which was basically it was network security. It was like a computer science foundation, but with kind of a network security focus. And, you know, I didn't know at the time, like what I was getting into, because like I thought, you know, basically I was more interested in the opportunity to work for this company. And, you know, it was in Milwaukee, which was kind of close proximity to home. And I went to school in Chicago. I graduated from Loyola University. So it all kind of like clicked. And I was like, you know, I'll just go with this and kind of figure it out. And I did enjoy the internship. So I was like, you know, this program sounds cool. Yeah. And then I did the program and it was like, it was a very cool 2 years. They basically, you know, initially I was in kind of this reporting role. I mean, this was like 15 years ago. So, you know, I was working on like dashboards and analytics, and that was in Milwaukee. Then I did a security role where I was deploying like security software on all their assets, like their servers and stuff like that. And I, you know, basically it was a proof of concept. And, you know, this program was cool because I got to like own all of these deliverables. So you kind of own it and you drive it and you get mentors, you get like assignment leaders that kind of coach and guide you. And then it started to get more interesting. So then I got to go to Princeton, New Jersey for my third rotation. So the first two were in Milwaukee. The third one was in Princeton. And there I worked on ERP deployment, which was like my first taste of enterprise, business enterprise systems. You know, it was getting more into like the business space, less IT and more like, you know, the functional realm. And there I actually, so I started in New Jersey and then the project kind of went to Europe. And then I got to live in the UK for 3 months doing that, deployment. So that was the cool part, like being part of this program in a big company, you have all these opportunities to sort of travel. These projects can take you different places. So I lived in the UK. They literally put me up in a hotel for 3 months. Initially, it was like in the countryside. And it was this swanky hotel where you have like, you know, English breakfast every day with like white tablecloth and silverware and all this, right? Like, you know, they fetch the, you know, they have the sausage from the butcher and like you hear chickens and stuff. Like it was pretty cool. And you have these like senior leaders like coming, going like the CEOs of all the different businesses. So here am I, like I am this, you know, the little guy. It was a cool thing. Then I think I persuaded my assignment leader. I was like, you know, this is fun, but this was going to last 3 months. And I was like, you know, I don't know if I can stay 3 months in the countryside. It was the countryside of London. So I was like, you know, I want to go to the city. Like, can I move to London and like take the train to work? And she's like, yeah, you know, so I got an apartment in London and then I stayed in London for like another 2 months. So it was like 1 month in the countryside and 2 months in London. And that was my third rotation. And then there was a fourth rotation where, what was my fourth? I think the fourth rotation, yeah, it was back in Milwaukee and it was like on the client PC team, like where I, you know, worked on deploying different software to like, you know, some of the PCs and the tech stack there. But, you know, basically the long story short of it was I got four different experiences within a 2 year time frame within the IT organization. And then you kind of towards the end of that, you pitch to the leadership team and say, this is what I did in my four rotations, and you know, this is kind of what I want to do or where I can see myself rolling off into a full-time role. And so then the leadership team kind of like takes all of these report outs and they decide like where to place you. So I rolled off that program and I went directly into mergers and acquisitions, but on the infrastructure side. So I joined a team that was basically focused on, you know, we buy a company and then how do we integrate the infrastructure? And that, you know, infrastructure could be any IT infrastructure. It could be like servers, it could be PCs, it could be Active Directory. It could be like literally like the cabling in the facilities, like, you know, making sure that they have the right cabling. There's probably a lot of other technology areas I'm missing, but essentially I did that for a long time. You know, I rolled off into that infrastructure team and I did that. And then I went to corporate, GE corporate. And so then I got exposure to other GE business units besides just healthcare. So I started in healthcare, but then when I joined corporate, you know, we were working on like GE Digital M&A deals, and there were like data center closures and stuff like that that I got involved in. So it was like not just healthcare, but across the board, any sort of M&A or internal restructuring. And then, yeah, GE Digital was this big hot topic for a while, and we can get into that if you guys want. Like basically General Electric, this old conglomerate, you know, they tried to pivot to the digital side as a whole company. It was this big transformation. So I was actually part of that digital organization for a while. And then I went back into healthcare, and I went back into healthcare probably close to 6 years ago now. So I rejoined healthcare. It was like an opportunity that came up. I could stay within the M&A space, but when I rejoined, I was more focused on enterprise applications. So while I did infrastructure for a long time, I had that infrastructure background. I then pivoted, you know, I was kind of like, you know, I've done this for a while. You reach that point in your career where like you're kind of like, hey, I get it, you know, I'm ready for something new. And then, you know, the team that I joined was basically the team that that I'm with now, that does all of the business process mapping and sort of getting all of the applications integrated. So because there's really two pieces to any integration, there's the infrastructure and then there's the enterprise applications that you acquire on a given company. And so what I do now, I mean, the team I'm with right now, we handle both because GE Corporate is no longer around. So we handle actually both the infrastructure and the applications, and we can get into that. But that's what I do now. Basically, you know, we buy companies and we have to get them fully integrated from both of those facets. And I have the background kind of now from both of those perspectives.
I am curious about these the typical scenario in a merger or acquisition. So what I teach in 651 is these are major reasons for like doing real integration projects, such as mergers and acquisition. And you mentioned integration is the only thing you do when you merge. Has it happened that you just throw away someone's software because it just not worth integrating? It's so different or so complicated. Or has it been that it's been the reason for success, like having the very good IT infrastructure has been reason for success or failure?
Yeah, so like great question. I mean, as part of any new acquisition, the first thing that we do is we try to understand the business, because, you know, like that's like our main philosophy, at least our team is like the last thing we want to do is break the business, right? Because there's a lot of money riding on, you know, making sure that a newly acquired business unit is a success. I mean, we can get into that as well. Like, it's very interesting. There's a lot of reasons why companies like ours pursue M&A deals. It's basically this whole like inorganic growth. You could either go organically or inorganically. And the reason, they do these deals is there's certain value drivers that they find that, this is like a good way to scale the business, or grow the supply chain, or it's this talent, or it's this IP. It's very interesting. But going back to your specific question of what do we do with their applications or their enterprise systems, I actually view the word applications is you need to go into the next level of detail. So there's enterprise applications, which to me are like transactional business systems, and then there's client software, which is actually much less interesting. It's like your Zip utilities or your Adobe Acrobat reader or these sorts of things that are kind of run of the mill. Basically all I care about there is, do you have the licenses for it? Because we want to remain compliant. And if you don't, you just go buy licenses. But the enterprise systems, I mean, those are actually very tricky and very difficult to kind of unwind and really just to even to understand and then even begin to unwind. But they're, really, again, I'll go back to the point of like understanding the business and how they work. So we don't actually start from the systems, we actually start from the business processes. So you really need to understand across all the different functions, whether it's like commercial or order management, order execution, or logistics, or manufacturing, or sourcing, or finance. There's all these different business functions, and then all these business functions have certain processes that they do, actually quite a lot of processes. And then the systems are part of those processes. So we try to understand how do they work, what is their as-is business process, what systems do they use, who touches these systems, what data resides in these systems. And then, once you've understood that, then you can kind of try to do this fit gap analysis to understand, okay, how does that stack up against the way that we work? What do our systems look like? Our corresponding systems, our corresponding business processes. Based on that fit gap analysis, you can then say, okay, are these systems a fit, or are they a rip and replace? So you can either retain some of these applications, or you have to migrate onto our applications. But because our company is relatively big, like we had an IPO, we went public, so that's where I mentioned, I started with General Electric. GE Healthcare spun out from General Electric. General Electric actually recently, I mean, this was probably a year and a half, 2 years ago now, probably close to 2 years. So it was a big news. Like they said, okay, we're gonna rip this giant conglomerate into the individual business units. And then those individual business units, I think they've all gone public, I believe. And so they're rebranding. So like healthcare is its own company now, with some ties to General Electric. Like maybe there's still some shareholder equity from like GE corporate, but by and large, like we're our own company. Because we're a large company, and we're a public company, we have our own set of systems. Usually the companies that we acquire are smaller companies, and unless it's like a big acquisition where we would it would make sense to adopt their systems, the majority of the time we will actually this is probably not a good word, but like force them to adopt the way we work and our systems, because the reality is it's a much larger fish swallowing a smaller fish most of the time. But the way you do that is, you have to be like empathetic and understanding. And because a lot of the times with M&A, there's a lot of sensitivity to roles and responsibilities and people's jobs. And if you put yourself in their shoes, right? You're being acquired. You don't know what tomorrow holds. You don't know if you're gonna continue to have your job or how your role is changing. So like all of these things are actually very closely interwoven and kind of interlinked. Is, although I'm here in IT and I'm kind of developing the project to map out like the strategy and how we're gonna change your systems and processes, like we have to remember at the end of the day that is impacting how they work today and like the people's jobs and livelihoods and stuff like that. So it can get into that realm as well.
So
No, that's fascinating.
that really is, because I think especially a lot of times in these conversations, we're talking about technology, we're talking about advancements, we're talking about artificial intelligence and how working and learning and growing is all going to be changed. And it's interesting when you're talking about a large company doing a merger and acquisition that there is still a people part of it that you're very aware of. Is that difficult to deal with? Like I feel like I would bring that home, you know, like if I met someone that I'm like, oh, you're learning about their job, and you're like, this ain't gonna be around in another 6 months. Like, is that like, how do you as a person deal with that, or am I completely just catastrophizing?
So I mean, it's not something that I actually have oversight over, because really a lot of these questions are like HR decisions. And so like on any M&A deal, I'm representing IT, which is really just one function, one area, but you have all of these other functions with their respective integration leaders as well. To make an integration successful, you have all of these other areas and all these other leads that are part of this journey. So like the HR integration lead, like that would be their responsibility to make sure that all of these employees that we've acquired, they map over to corresponding job titles and job responsibilities within our organization. But the interesting thing is that this role that I'm in, I would say probably the reason I've been in it so long, for like 15 years, and I haven't even like really bounced around. I mean, besides going from healthcare to corporate to digital back to healthcare, but pretty much doing more or less the same thing. And then, probably adding, like I said, the application, the enterprise apps component to it. The reason I've been doing it so long is because it's so exciting to me that it's always changing. And I don't think like the same can necessarily be said for other areas of IT. Like, you might be like on the network team and, you're getting constantly like new technologies, like tech stack is getting updated and, you're changing like maybe your processes and how you do network within the company or how you do PCs and, you roll out PCs and the image and the operating system and the tools. So yeah, like there's change there, but like within M&A, I mean, I'm going from one project to another project, and it's always a different company with their own culture, with their own, new people that I'm working with, new processes. Like I'm in constant learning mode. And it's actually fun because we're always changing our stuff on the GE healthcare side, right? Because we're constantly updating like our technologies and our processes, and then we're buying companies, and that's always new. So like it's always like fitting a round peg in a square hole, kind of, right? Because like everything's changed, the ground from underneath you is changing. Or like when GE healthcare spun out from GE corporate, we had to stand up all of these competencies and technologies. Like it was basically an opportunity for us to kind of start fresh and kind of relook at how do we do things within IT. And so a lot of things changed post IPO for us. So yeah, like that's kind of the fun part for M&A for me at least, is that it's always changing, and it's always something new. The technology is always changing, the companies that we're acquiring are always changing. But I think your original question was something else, and I've gone on a
No,
tangent.
that.
It was basically the people portion, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think what I was just gonna add, maybe the last point, and then I'll shut up. The fun part also within IT is that IT drives the business change, and I don't think outside of M&A it's as true in some of the other areas of IT. Granted, like we're a big IT organization. Like I forget if it's like 3,000 employees or something like that. Like, but you know, it's a pretty big IT organization to support all of GE Healthcare, which is probably, don't quote me, but you know, it's in the tens of thousands of employees. But within M&A, IT drives the business process change because we're changing the systems, and because we're changing the systems, we're changing the business and we're transforming the business. So actually, I think the reason I like this space is because I've always wanted to be more closely aligned to the business because I think that's the interesting place to be. You know, the plumbing or the infrastructure is a little bit, once you get it, you get it. Like, you know, it's basically, it's the pipes that make everything work, but the applications is like where the business value is and where like the, you know, the unlock for me is because that's where the money is made. And it's really interesting to understand kind of the value proposition of these various different systems and how they affect, you know, revenue, how they affect the commercial operations, how they affect the logistics operations, how they affect like all these different areas. So although I'm in IT, like I get visibility to all these other functional areas and I work with all these other functional leaders in the organization, which is really cool for me personally.
I'll take the next one. Dennis, well, first of all, I'm lucky to have people in my network like you to bring you to the show. And for how this conversation is going, I know we have to have you back just because I have so many questions in my mind. And I don't know if 30 minutes can do it. But I have to ask at least a couple of them now. And maybe you take the first one and let's see if the other one goes too far. So a couple of things that were super interesting to me and that really strike to me is the fact that some of these M&A are global company or company that are outside the US. And so I was very curious, what is your perspective or how do you approach a global acquisition rather than like a, let's say a US-based acquisition? If it's completely different approach to that. And the second question is, and I really have to do it because my PhD advisor was into digital transformation, you know, digital capabilities, IT capabilities. So I need to ask more about GE Digital and as much as you can share about that phase of your career. I want to learn more.
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. Maybe start with the global one. You know, I'm actually going through this right now. I'm doing a very complex global integration. It's actually probably the most difficult one I've done. One, because of the size, and two, because of how many systems they have and how much data they have. And so I think the global aspect definitely adds to the complexity. Especially, and you know, the other thing to like keep in mind is like these companies that you acquire, some, you know, they're at like different stages of maturity as well. You know, maturity in terms of their business processes, their systems, the cleanliness of their data. And data is actually a very big component because if we're migrating onto our systems, then data quality is very important. Like at the end of the day, you know, and there's, you know, if you think about these large enterprise systems, right? Like the CRMs, like the customer relationship management, where you do like, you know, your opportunities, your quoting, or your order submission, or your actual like manufacturing transactions, you know, like generating like manufacturing work orders and like building stuff. Like, you know, we're building, you know, healthcare devices. Like, you know, these are complicated operations. And not only that, they're also regulated system, regulated business processes and regulated systems. You know, because we're in a healthcare industry, we're actually governed by a ton of regulation. You know, there's SOX compliance on the finance side, there's GxP compliance on the manufacturing side, there's HIPAA, there's, you know, PHI, PII. Security compliance is a huge part of everything that we do. So that's the other complicating factor, I would say, is like not only you have to integrate and you have to ingest all this data, but you have to stay compliant with all of this various regulation. So, but going back to the the global piece, yeah, I mean, like it's very common, like we'll have companies that we acquire that are headquartered in other countries. One of the I would say one of the important pieces with that is like there's a legal aspect as well to all of these deals, and by that I mean there's legal entities involved. So like GE Healthcare has their own legal entities, and then the company that we buy operates under different legal entities, which are kind of the legal jurisdictions of how they're structured. And so that piece is important because you have to, either you kind of keep their legal entity structure or you merge within our legal entity structure. And usually these legal entities exist within the different countries that they operate in. So like if you have a company that you buy, that's a global company, and they might have direct business, like I don't know if you're familiar with the term like direct sales channels and indirect sales channels. So like indirect sales channels are like distributors, whereas direct sales channels are that's basically their subsidiaries that are selling their product. Like there's no middleman, they're selling direct to the customer. So like usually the direct side, they have legal entities within these various different countries. And so that is another factor you have to weigh is there's a whole nother aspect to M&A, which is like you have filings with actually like the governments, like they're like government filings to say like, hey, we bought this company and we're going to merge them on this date with our. Because let's say like GE Healthcare is operating in France, but we buy a company in France, and they have their own legal structure, but you want to merge those two into one. So you have to do all these filings, and when you do the filings, there's a point of no return when it's official. You say, okay, I'm going to transact against this entity from this date onwards, and it's a legal kind of obligation to do it, which is kind of a forcing function for us. By that date, the systems have to be integrated because, we're essentially transacting as GE Healthcare from that point onwards. And sometimes we don't merge the legal entities. We might actually say like, hey, we're going to keep this as a separate,
It
a
seems
separate
less
legal
work.
entity.
Give
Yeah,
me some,
or
it
there
seems
might
less
be,
work.
well, there might be reasons that are actually like, for example, you have a what do you call it? It's a license to sell the medical devices. It's like a commercial license, and that permission is tied to the legal entity. And sometimes to transfer this permission to sell this authorization is a lot of is a very time-consuming process. So actually, there's a lot of aspects. I think the most difficult role that you could probably have is like to be an overall integration leader, like not, I'm within IT, but like if you're looking at it as an overall leader, it's probably, one of the most challenging roles because you have to all of these moving pieces, you have to like keep track and, make sure that you have understanding of all the different dependencies to kind of make it all happen and kind of tie it all together. Like the legal aspect and, the commercialization aspect and like the engineering aspect. So yeah, it's actually can be very tricky on, especially if it's a larger deal and a global deal. And then, that's not to mention, of course, you have like time zone differences, cultural differences.
That
But the most
is what I
important
was
thing.
expecting the most to hear
Yeah.
from times
Yeah,
off.
maybe I went too much in the technical details, but
No. That was awesome. That helps a lot. Actually, I have no idea how complex your job is until this talk. Every time we talk, it's more like an informal chat. Hey, I'm doing this, but now I'm really seeing how much you have to put into pulling them, and it's actually awesome. I'm glad we did this. I'm learning a
yeah,
lot.
Yeah, well, the most important thing of a global deal is I have to travel there. So, and hopefully it's in a tropical location. You know, I've been waiting for that Hawaii acquisition for a long time.
Yeah. I'm still fascinated by the people aspect. When you acquire a company, you know, the view of the new bosses is generally not necessarily positive because, as just like Russ said, they don't know what the future of their job is. And I assume you go in and talk to users in the new company, right? You do a lot of that probably, and like you face to face interact with them, and they're going to associate you with the new bosses that are going to control their fate without their control. But you don't make that decision, right? How do you, so, and that creates some sort of like resistance, like it's some sort of negative hostility. How do you get around that? How do you gain their trust and say, hey, it's not about you. I just care about your tech here. I just want to figure things out.
You're absolutely right. I mean, sometimes there's resistance to change, right? And that can be like that can make or break your whole program, like the whole integration program. Because if you can't win over like the people that ultimately you have to work with to make this thing successful, then you're just setting yourself up for failure. And as IT, like oftentimes we are the face of the business because we're oftentimes like maybe not the first to talk to them, but we do have a lot of exposure because of like I said, like understanding their business and kind of the way we even on the infrastructure side, like we have to get the new PCs, stuff like that. So we have to actually work very closely with them from the very beginning, actually before the deal is even closed, right? We get pulled in. I think that how do you have to be nice, like you can't force as cliche as that sounds, like yeah, you can't force anything upon them, right? Like you basically have to build trust and make sure that they understand that this is like a partnership. And eventually, like these people that were acquired, like they have to realize like either you're in it or you're not, because you can't just be difficult, because like basically you've been acquired, so you have to embrace the change. And I think the most of the people usually understand this. I mean, there's always a few bad eggs that here's the door if you don't want to be part of this, right? But like this is going to be you're part of this bigger company now, and it's in your best interest, like if you want to kind of pursue a career within this company that you've been acquired as part of, like it's in your best interest to kind of partner with us and kind of like work with us, and we want to work with them. Like when we come in, like it's truly like a partnership, like, and we try to show them like that, there's many opportunities within our organization. Like their job, because like for us, most of that is within IT, right? Like I wouldn't tell, commercial people like how to do their job. Like we have like commercial track leads and commercial functional leads that would partner with them and explain to them how our commercial organization works. But like my role would be to, if we acquire an IT organization that's a smaller IT organization, we definitely do have to figure out, okay, how do we fit that in within our IT organization? Kind of how do you map over what are these people's competencies? And I don't necessarily get into the HR aspect of that, but you definitely try, by working with them, you kind of see, okay, these people, they're infrastructure experts, or these people are system experts, and naturally they kind of get absorbed into those organizations on our side, depending on where their competencies are or even where their interests are. I mean, they might say, hey, I'm interested in security, and maybe there's an opening or a role for them in our security organization, stuff like that.
I want to jump back in, and I have two questions again. I have to stop doing this because then the second one always goes away. automatically. But the first one is it goes back to the other one I was doing before, is when we're talking about embracing change. So maybe we can reconnect to doing a digital transformation topic that we were talking before. But the other question is, I'm very curious about this. Are you involved before the acquisition is completed in saying, like, is this a good company to acquire, or they you just getting somebody that's been acquired and then you do the assessment afterwards? How do you even identify the company that you should acquire?
Yeah, so maybe I'll start with the second question because I think that's easier. So yeah, there actually is like a central BD function. I think it's pretty standard for like the industry, you know, and I think we just follow that model. So there is, you know, that central BD function. They're the ones kind of working to identify like targets that they want to pursue. And you know, we get involved before the deals are made public. But you know, there's like super early involvement, and then there's like early involvement, and then there's like, you know, it's already public, and then like, you know, a lot of people get involved. So there's various different like NDAs, you know, like non-disclosure agreements you sign, you know, before deals are made public. You know, so there is a lot of strict confidentiality around like, you know, potential acquisition targets and like, you know, it's basically a due diligence phase. You do, you know, you kind of assess this potential company that, you know, we may want to buy, and you kind of take a look at certain things that might be risks, you know, if we were to pursue that purchase. So we get involved more in an advisory capacity, I would say, to like, you know, assess any kind of potential red flags or anything like that pre-close. But yeah, the central BD function, like they're the ones that have the fun job to like, you know, go and kind of search like, you know, what the different acquisition targets would be, you know, based on kind of where what direction the organization is going, and where they kind of view some of these different opportunities. But I think, yeah, so hopefully that answered your question of like the stages or the timing. Yeah. And then the digital piece. So yeah, it's actually a very interesting story. I think there's like books on this and like probably even like documentaries and stuff. But you know, General Electric as a whole, they were kind of late to embrace the digital transformation. You know, and part of it, you know, there's probably a lot of reasons why. I think Jeff, so I don't know if you guys know Jeff Immelt. He was the CEO, like very famous CEO. There's like Jack Welch, Jeff Immelt. These were like these were guys that were like talking to like presidents of different countries. Like that's how big they were, you know, like because like you know, yeah, GE could basically, you know, they could make like big government contracts for like I said, like trains or like aviation or oil and gas deal, like, you know. And so they were talking to like governments of like, you know, different countries and stuff like that, or advising like different administrations and stuff. You know, it's pretty interesting. So Jeff Immelt, I think, actually wrote a book after he, you know, because he was kind of attributed to the breakup of General Electric because they were late to embrace the digital transformation. But you know, he also did a lot of good things. Like, you know, I'm sure there's a mixed biography in there somewhere. And his whole thing was this, you know, we need to pivot to be digital. And basically it was this company-wide effort to, because they said like, hey, we make all this cool stuff. Like we make all these industrial machines. And they said like, you know, let's create, basically, they created an ERP. It was like a homegrown system. It was called Predix. So they created this homegrown ERP, and they said, we're going to collect all of the information from all these like different devices that are out there in the field, whether it's like windmills or, you know, again, the jet engines or, you know, like oil and gas pipelines or the locomotives. We're going to like create these like, you know, they're all like IoT devices, or they can be transformed into IoT devices. And we're going to collect data and then pump it into Predix, which is like this huge platform. And then we're gonna figure, and then we're gonna sell, like we're gonna create, SaaS products and sell them to our customers to like tell them, maybe it's time to service your windmill, or there's like something, basically you have a data mine of information, right? And then you can figure out like what to upsell to your customers. So that was kind of the precedent with the digital shift. And we were buying a lot of interesting companies at the time when they did this GE digital transformation. We were buying like AI startups, and they were like university affiliated, like small AI shops in like Berkeley and stuff like that. And these were like companies that had developed bolt-on or technologies that we thought we could commercialize to like bolt onto this Predix application. But for whatever reason, I guess it was probably a case of like too little, too late. Like this digital transformation probably needed to happen like 10 years earlier, or what have you. I don't think they were able to successfully commercialize this application, like the collection of the data and the upselling of this application and the services that it provided to customers. So that was actually like the reason GE Digital kind of, it came and it went, and then it kind of fizzled out. And eventually, like I said, General Electric was broken up into the constituent business units, because they thought that it was more efficient to run it as, five, six small companies instead of one giant conglomerate. But yeah, that's kind of how, GE Digital, it was spun up. But I don't think this IoT concept really was able to take off off the ground.
So where those devices are installed on windmills and locomotives and jet engines, where is that data going right now? Who has those?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. Like, I mean, I'm sure they're still collecting a
It's
ton
being
of
funneling
data. I mean,
somewhere, yeah.
yeah, but it's probably just within that particular business unit, whereas this was like a huge company-wide effort to make this all like one giant data warehouse, right? But I think today, probably each of these business units, they have their own data warehouse solutions. But I'm sure they still collect, there's probably the sensors are still there. I'm sure they're collecting information and they're analyzing it. I mean, GE and all the business units have a giant service operation, because a lot of our margins is not even, I mean, there's of course revenue from the initial equipment sale, but a lot of the revenue comes from the service aspect, especially like within healthcare. We sell an expensive medical device, but that medical device, think of like a giant CT scanner or an MRI machine or something like that. Those are huge CapEx purchases for, especially like smaller hospitals or something like that. And then they last for like 20 years, right? And so you have to service it within that 20-year time frame, and so a lot of the revenue is made on the back end, actually.
They do have to, they have to collect. Those sensors, like you're saying, too little, too late. They without those sensors, you can't sell machinery. Like decades ago, Boeing was collecting almost a terabyte of data per flight. So industrial machinery has gone that route for a very long time.
For sure. Yeah, exactly. But also these devices are getting like smaller and smaller.
And
Although like a
cheaper.
CT, yeah, probably cheaper. Well, there's different segments too. There's like premium and like mid-range, and then there's like a low-cost segment. So they actually have it where, and this is getting outside of my specialty area, really into the business metrics and stuff. But they cater to all kinds of different customers. Our biggest competitors are like Philips, Siemens, these giant like medical device manufacturers. But the trend is, precision care. Like, you know, basically it's like they want to diagnose and treat everything earlier, right? That's kind of like where the industry is headed as a whole. So they're trying to look for ways to incorporate like AI to do earlier diagnosis, you know, for the patients and stuff like that. And you know, have these machines be smarter, where it's like less human intervention and more, you know, the computer will give you the recommendations and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I really enjoy not just my job, but I kind of like the industry because, you know, I think it's kind of a good mission that, you know, the mission statement is like to, you know, improve health and, you know, it's not like a weapons manufacturer or something like that, right? Like the other side of the spectrum. Although I'm sure
No.
you need that for society too, but
Yeah,
Yeah,
Dennis is going to switch
they
over to
will tell you.
Raytheon now and then. Dennis, I want to be cognizant of your time, and this conversation has been enthralling and very interesting. And like Biagio said, I think we're going to have you back because it never changes,
Definitely.
or it always changes. So like we're always going to have something to talk about. But I want to bring
Yeah.
it back to kind of a more basic question. And for someone who's starting their career or thinking about switching their career, or maybe they're one of these archetypes we've discussed about maybe being acquired and having to pivot into a different area, what would you recommend someone doing to better prepare themselves for the business world now? I know that's a broad question, but just wherever it may be, what does that look like for you, or what do you look for in other people that you might be working with?
Yeah, no, it's an awesome question. I mean, I would say one, I mean, I think, and this is just like very practical advice. I think like internships are a great way to launch your career. So like my advice to any like university student that might be listening or anything like that is like, you know, try to leverage those opportunities like as much as you can, because you know, once you get your foot in the door and you build those relationships, and you know, the company that you work for kind of get a sense for who you are. I mean, it's just a great opportunity. So like, you know, and there's so many specialized programs too, across a whole realm of companies. So I think like definitely leverage all of that and don't get discouraged like if you apply and you don't get it, because I just think like with everything is so digital now, and it's like so, you know, so easy to apply. And like worst case, somebody will say no, and like, you know, then what, right? What's the worst that can happen, right? You could apply to like, you know, 50 companies, and then, you know, if you get three, well, maybe those three or that one or two is enough to, you know, launch your career to the next level. So that's just like on a very practical side. And then I would say like, you know, just being curious and like reading and listening to podcasts like this and see what I did there. And
We're very
thank you.
appreciative.
Yeah, so I think being curious and like pursuing your interests is, you know, the other important piece. And like, you know, whether that's in work or in life, you know, it doesn't really even matter. And I think even in work, you know, there's areas that, you know, I find interesting, like, you know, like I mentioned AI, or, you know, I know we didn't get into crypto, but like there's different technologies that like corporations and companies are interested to adopt. Like that to me is just like fun to, you know, that would just be even like a hobby of mine to, you know, to research and look into. So I don't think work has to be boring, or, you know, I think the key is like try to make work fun, and, you know, hopefully go into an area that, you know, you're passionate about. Like, you know, I think that's the goal for everybody, right?
I
Perfect.
agree, Dennis. I think that was an awesome way to cap off this conversation. Again, we will have you back, and I thank you for your time. This was awesome and full of wisdom and insight. So thank you again. And thank you for listening to another episode of The Gateway, brought to you by Northern Illinois University, where your future is our focus. And please, remember to love always the promise of tomorrow today.